The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello and welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominique Gates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. After the Packers officially clinch a spot in the playoffs, winning 34-0 on the New Orleans Saints on Monday Night Football. So, not a whole lot you can take away from this game. The Packers, you could say, kind of did what they were supposed to. But I'll start and just get your general observations, spoon, and takeaways from this game.
Well, I could get on the offense a little bit and... You know, the passing game wasn't great, but they basically just played, you know, played good enough to win in, I don't want to say cruddy conditions, but not ideal, wet, somewhat cold. I don't know. I don't take a lot out of anything, except that, you know, defensively, even though they were playing against, you know, pretty much a minor league team today. You can just see there's certain things that are starting to come along, sort of like you used to see, sort of like you saw with the run game early in the year. Now you're starting to see some of the secondary and the pass rush are kind of marrying together a little bit more. I'm really, really eager to see how they how they play against the Vikings, against a real team.
Same for you, just kind of general takeaways.
Can you help me understand why it is that every week I look up at the scoreboard and they've just stomped an inferior opponent, and it never seems like they play their best game?
No.
Definitely. Like 34-0. Yes, the Saints were without Derek Carr, Chris Olave, Alvin Kamara. I mean, they should, we said it all week. They're going to smoke the Saints. And then they went out and smoked the Saints. So they did what they should do, and I think on some level you should be lauded for doing what you're supposed to do in this league, because a lot of times teams don't. So that means something. And yet, it's just they hit this, you know, three straight drives to open the game with touchdowns. They look unstoppable. They could have dropped 50 points on this team, right? And 34 just in some way, and it was 34-0. It's the only shutout in the league this entire season. That's all really good in theory, and then it's just kind of like, eh, they could have been better. I don't get it. Like, it's hard to be better than 34-0. It's the largest, most lopsided Packers win. Spoon, I'm sure you remember. I remember this game as my first season. Mm-hmm. 2014, 55-14 against the Chicago Bears. That night, known as 6 passing touchdowns for Aaron Rodgers in the first half. Okay? The largest margin of victory since then. It's not a game that I should feel that way about, and yet I do. It's a weird feeling. And I felt the same way last week when they stomped Seattle in primetime in Seattle, a team that was fighting for their NFC West lives. I mean, I don't get why I feel like this.
Maybe that's who they're going to be. You know, yeah. Maybe we're all sitting around thinking they're going to be, you know, the exciting passing team they were last year, who just, you know, we're on fire, and Love was making throws that you couldn't believe, and guys were getting open. Maybe the face of this team is just a grinded out kind of team that wins with defense and a running game, and that's what people have to accept.
That's good in the playoffs, though, isn't it? Like, that's kind of what you want in the playoffs, a physical, healthy, good defense, run-oriented offense with a very capable quarterback that wins, that plays in the postseason. Which is where they're headed now.
It does. I feel like, you know, what separates Kansas City from everybody is that when they need a passing drive, you know, at any time, they can
anytime,
you know, drum it up and boom, you know, they'll just hit you. So I'm not sure if Green Bay is in that position. You'd like to see them have just like a you know, breakout passing game, but maybe that's just not going to happen.
You know, I walked down to the locker room tonight after filing the quick game story, in which I led with, it still wasn't the complete four-quarter game that this team's been looking for, but the score wouldn't indicate that because it doesn't. I walked down to the locker room thinking, was I too hard on them. Like, am I just a touch maybe overcritical? And then Josh Jacobs says, yeah, felt like we left two or three touchdowns on the board, right? So, like, no, that it still wasn't the complete, but it was really, really good. I mean, you can't, you know, they absolutely dismantled a team that they were supposed to dismantle. And it's still, even in this league, it's hard to actually dismantle a team to the level that they did. I don't care who, backup quarterback without the top, it's still hard to do that. And they went out and they did it.
Yeah. One of the guys I talked to in the locker room, Dontavian Wicks, he said, quote, we should have scored 50 in this game. And I mean, you saw when they opened up the just 10 plays, 58 yards, scored a touchdown. The next drive, what, 17 plays, another touchdown. They were just clicking on all cylinders. But at least when you look at the offense, Tom, is this at least a good recipe for success in terms of how they're distributing it to different guys? Like, there are 9 different guys are rushing the ball. They got different receivers, Tucker Kraft, the run game with 3 different guys just having success. Is that at least a good formula? Like, has LaFleur kind of figured something out with the group?
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Like, I still think that Jaden Reed needs to see the ball more. I think he is their most clutch player. I think nobody makes plays better than he does. When the ball is in the air, he's more than likely of anybody else to come down with it. And he showed that on that deep corner route where he just stuck it with his hands, you know. It's a good throw, but it was a better catch. And I wonder if at some point they do need to game plan a little bit more. I'm sure they are, but I don't think there's anything wrong with having a guy with 11 catches and 168 yards and 3 touchdowns or something like that. It's hard. They have a hard thing to do because all their guys are the same, pretty much. I just think Reed's a little step above the rest, but all the other guys do something well, but it's different. And I don't know how you highlight that.
For you, I don't know a guy that you were pretty high on to is Tucker Kraft. Mm-hmm. It was a game where, once again, he was able to get it going. And even in some of those explosive deep passing games, you know, he was over the middle wide open. Just, you know, what did you see from a guy like him and just continually what he adds to this offense? Because there were a few games where it might have been a little bit slower or didn't have as big of a performance as he had tonight.
You know, Tucker Kraft is the guy to me that they need to every single week in this offense focus on and get the ball to, because he represents easy completions. And there's nobody in this offense, I would say even Jaden Reed, and Jaden Reed is, I mean, it's 1A, 1B. Even Jaden Reed's, I don't know that he's the playmaker after the catch. Even Tucker Kraft is. I mean, he's the best playmaker in this offense after the catch, and he's the easiest completion in this offense. So they did it again tonight. I think that's something. This offense is spread it out in the passing game. It's built on depth. To me, that's the one guy that every single week needs to be getting an ample amount of work. And I thought even tonight he could have had more. I mean, I never leave a game thinking, oh, Tucker Kraft couldn't have more targets. I mean, he always could have more targets.
It is kind of fascinating to watch him because, I mean, I watched this game. It's like, okay, he was trying to get Wicks involved more, and he got his first touchdown in 7 games. We talked about Reed, some of those explosive plays. So I don't know if it is, like you say, a good problem to have, but it is different compared to, like, a team like the Vikings when it's like, Justin Jefferson's your guy. He's going to have a big explosive performance, and the other guys just try to follow suit. But, I mean, when I look at the run game and Josh Jacobs, what more can you ask for from a guy like that? And what's he doing? What is it, 14 touchdowns up to this point? And he just sometimes he makes it look so effortless, and he's had a lot of highlights this season. But even above his play, he is a guy that's just, you could say, relishing in the moment of getting the chance to go to the playoffs, which is something that he hasn't been able to do a lot when he was with the Raiders.
Yeah, we can get back to the playoff clenching later, because that was interesting in the locker room for sure. But Josh Jacobs now 13 rushing touchdowns on the season. He's tied for second in the NFL with Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Kyron Williams. All those guys are touchdown machines, and that's what Josh Jacobs is. Only Jalen Hurts and James Cook in Buffalo are ahead of him with 14 each. Six straight games now that Josh Jacobs has got a rushing touchdown. He has single-handedly fixed this Packers red zone offense, as I think we all kind of expected that he would be the long-term solution. He has been. Only Paul Hornung in Packers history, seven straight games in 1960 with more consecutive games with a rushing touchdown. I asked Josh Jacobs after the game, look, you're a young guy. I don't know how versed you are on long time, football history. Paul Hornung, the name, mean anything to you? And he's like, no, not really. But then I said, yeah, he's the only guy. And his face was like, whoa. Like, Josh Jacobs knows what he's doing. Like, he is putting together an all-pro caliber season. Now, we'll see if he's a first-team all-pro in a league that has Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry as well. But he's right there with those guys as the top three running backs in the league. And the Packers offense runs through him. I thought Matt LaFleur was very wise when he went up to Josh Jacobs in the halftime locker room and said, hey, with a 21-point lead, hey, if we score again, you're not going to play anymore. We're going to save your legs. And that's good because he should have fresh legs from Minnesota.
Yeah, that was another thing I was thinking. I was, especially in that third quarter, I'm like, okay, I'm wondering if they're going to get another touchdown so you can try to start to pull some guys out, put the Malik Willises of the world in, but they just weren't able to get that touchdown until late, and then those backup guys came in. But I do want to go to sticking with Jacobs, Spoon, just in terms of the impact that he's made here. Obviously, there's been a lot of running backs that's come through Green Bay. I'm not asking you to rank or do anything like that, but just as far as what he's done in his time here, just in terms of just that impact that he has kind of brought to this offense.
Yeah, we actually had that discussion like this on the blog. People were asking, who's the best running back and who is more physical? Has there ever been a more physical? Well, I mean, people forget about Eddie Lacy. Eddie Lacy was a man among boys, Amon Green was, he was superb and physical and fast as hell. And the only thing, Jacobs is a different type of back than those guys. Those guys all had breakaway ability, and so their stats were often bolstered by these big, long runs that they have. Lacy had a bunch. Amon Green always had. I think he had a 99-yarder? Anyway, he had like a 90-yarder or something like that. What's impressive about Jacobs is that he gets it just grinding, grinding, grinding. And in some ways, that's a really good thing because it keeps the other team off the field. It gets, the offense all lathered up. He's a good tool to have going into the off season, but they're all the guys I mentioned, big physical backs, and all with a little bit something different.
Yeah. Is there anything else you guys want to touch on offensively before we move into just the play of the defense?
Watson getting hurt was, again, I'm not sure that they need to keep running him on end arounds. Like, it seems like he gets hurt more doing that than anything else. Yeah. I mean, he got hurt, what was it, last year, Denver or something? Like, I can't remember who it was. He got hurt on an end around. Maybe that's 2 years ago.
Kansas City maybe. Year, right?
Yeah, he pulled that hamstring, right? Just throw him the ball. I mean, Love missed him. He was wide open. Holy moly. I haven't seen many guys that open.
You know why, though? Because he got 21 yards with Tucker Kraft on fourth and two. Like, easy completions.
But oof. That was a miss.
It was.
Can't lie. I do wonder what if he just didn't see, like, the guy just broke open late. Like,
I don't know he how jumped he on the ball.
I think he saw Tucker Kraft wide open for an easy completion.
That was just my mindset.
Was like, hey, let me just get the first down.
but... like I said, at least it was still a positive play for them. But, yeah, I was curious about that one.
So, I don't know. Other than that, well, Watson, he wasn't sure what really happened to him. But he shouldn't have gone back in the game because it tightened up on him. I don't know how serious it's going to be. We'll see. But they need him against the Vikings. They need him to stretch the field.
I think on both sides of the ball, Spoon, I know you talked to defensive guys about how they've done this. I mean, the fact that they had a shutout without Jaire Alexander, that's I mean, how many defenses in the league? I don't care who the quarterback or who your the offense is missing. How many defenses in the league can get a shutout without their top corner? That's hard to do, and they did it. But even on offense, this is a team that is built primarily on depth. They have a ridiculous amount of depth. It's hard to emphasize or overstate just how deep this team is. And, okay, there's no, like, Davante Adams on this team. There's no Jair Alexander on the field right now, right? I mean, there's no top corner. But they have the depth to have a Christian Watson, who has been going off for a month now, get injured, leave the game early, and the offense still puts up 34 points. They have the depth to not have Jair Alexander for a fifth straight game. Who knows what's happening there? The defense pitches a shutout. I don't know if anyone in the league has this kind of depth. And over the course of a long season, that is so incredibly important because attrition, and now the Packers have mostly stayed healthy, but attrition comes for everyone. Look at the Detroit Lions. An NFL season literally tests your depth. So to build through depth is a pretty good way to build a professional football team, and that is how this Packers team is built. It's a big reason why they have 11 wins, and it's a big reason why they just dismantle teams and keep going, even when they have key pieces that might drop out here and there.
That's true. I mean, even, yeah, with the ground game, I mean, obviously Josh Jacobs is your guy, but just the fact he was able to get a breath and Emmanuel Wilson was able to get a touchdown, Chris Brooks was able to get his first touchdown, just at least allowing him some of those moments to catch his breath when, okay, you want the game out of reach. I think he hurt his left hand in one of those plays. So, like I said, just getting him a minute to step away. He said he was fine. I mean, he's always going to be fine. He tried to go back in the game. You're just kind of learning that's who Josh Jacobs is. But at least having guys that can come in and give you some yards, maybe give you a touchdown, it's something to work with. When I look at the defense, what, three guys had sacks, Britton Cox Jr., Keyshawn Nixon also got a forced fumble, Devontae Wyatt got a sack as well. Edron Cooper all over the field once again. And we can talk about those guys piece by piece, but I do kind of want to go back to the point of you were just talking about with their passing game in terms of with the Saints without Jair Alexander. I think once again, you do have to at least tip the cap, if you will, to how Stokes and Carrington Valentine and just how these guys are, you could say, not only surviving, but at times, doing some pretty solid things. Now, we'll start with you, Spoon, just doing some pretty solid things without Jair in the mix. I think those guys have, they are showing some improvements regardless of you, maybe even the competition. They're still playing some smart assignment football.
I think, people sort of need to just not count on Alexander. I mean, there's just, I don't even know if he'll be there against Minnesota. I just keep getting the feeling that he's just kind of not going to be there. And when he is, they'll deal with it. But if you go, I don't think going into Minnesota, so many people on the blog were saying, well, great, they're saving him for Justin Jefferson and it'll be a great thing. But that's not how the defense works under Jeff Hafley, and they've really come to a nice little thing where all those guys have progressed. Stokes has become a decent zone corner. I mean, he rallies to the ball. He used to not be able to tackle. He's tackling really well. Carrington Valentine was not much of a tackler. He's really starting to come in on into his own on that. Had the big interception. Keyshawn Nixon, to me, is the number one corner, and I wouldn't feel bad about him covering Justin Jefferson a good amount of the time if he had to. I still think it's more of a scheme issue that they're going to have to find to slow down Justin Jefferson. You're going to have to find a way to get pressure on Darnold, but keep everything in front of him. Just do not let Justin Jefferson beat you deep. Mm-hmm. And same with Addison. I don't know how Jair Alexander would change things. I mean, yeah, he's a really good player, and he breaks up a lot of balls, but he's also given up some big plays, and he's also freelances. And you don't see guys freelancing out here. You don't see broken coverages. You don't see guys taking really bad chances. They have one pass all year. They've given up one pass all year of 40 or more yards. Mm. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yeah,
that's like unheard of. And it's because they are very disciplined. And I think that's what we're going to see against the Vikings. I wouldn't predict that he's going to play in that game.
Yeah, it wouldn't be, especially he's missed, what, 5 games?
Yeah, he's played 10 snaps in the last 7 games.
So it's like, yeah, are you just expecting him against Minnesota?
They're 5-2 in their last 7 games, too. And, you know, they were close against Detroit. They could have certainly used him against Detroit. But, you know, they rallied and held the Vikings to, what, 3 points in the second half of the game here, you know, and that was when they were pretty young, defense still learning Halfley's scheme, and that was without Alexander. So I think people have to just come to the realization that might be who they're going to have to be.
Yeah, but also just expecting him after missing some games to just jump in to Minneapolis and just be full speed, full goal, like he was in Tennessee having pick sixes and just being that fresh, like you would expect there to be rust. That was, I guess, my biggest takeaway. So if he's not played a full game in so long, it's not, I don't know if it is smart, and I would imagine Halfley of those guys aren't banking on Jair Alexander to be a fresh Jair Alexander. It's like different from Cooper, who only missed 2 games, and he came out flying around the football.
Well, I will say this about money players, you know, guys who are star players, that you could drop them out of a plane and they'll play unbelievably. You know, I mean, they don't, I wouldn't worry about rust or anything with Jair Alexander. I think if he's ready to play, he'll play. I think where it really comes in is fitting in, you know, fitting in, just fit him into where the defense is playing and stop worrying about him following Justin Jefferson, him being just, you know, continue to do what they're doing and plug him in there.
Well, yeah, what have you seen? Go ahead. What did you say?
Rust against most receivers in this league, I wouldn't worry about Jair Alexander. Against Justin Jefferson, he's not most receivers in this league. At Jair Alexander's best, he has the ability, he has a chance to take Justin Jefferson out of the game. There's not a lot of corners that have that type of potential. At his best, when we've seen that, at his best. The idea that he's going to be anywhere near his best playing 10 snaps since October is just ludicrous. I mean, he's not going to be. That's not plausible. So I agree that fitting him in, and you cannot expose him for a long period of time, a lengthy 4 quarters, and match him for 4 quarters against Justin Jefferson. But the freelancing. Midway through this game, I turned to our colleague Pete Doherty. I said, you know, Pete, the thing – this Packers secondary does not do that's very different than the past. They don't screw up a lot. They just don't. This is a secondary that does not screw up. And we've seen a lot of secondaries that have screwed up a lot. That is what the secondary does the best. And I think it comes directly from having a defense coordinator teacher in Jeff Halfley that understands DB play. He has a track record in coaching that and has clearly communicated assignments in a way that this secondary grasps, it understands, and it executes at a very high level. Mm-hmm. And that is how you maximize what you have from the talent at your disposal, by teaching it. And that is what Jeff Halfley does well. In many ways, going back to your point, Spoon, on Keyshawn Nixon, he is in many ways the perfect corner for what Jeff Halfley wants to do with this defense, which it starts with creativity and flexibility in the scheme. Tonight, Keyshawn Nixon's strip sack, which was the biggest play of the night for this defense, it came one series after Keyshawn Nixon had a free path to Spencer Rattler and had an easy sack lined up, and the play was called dead because Lucas Patrick, the former Packers offensive lineman now with the Saints, was called for a full start, and Keyshawn Nixon's just hopping mad because he knows. I mean, he's got a sack. He goes back to Jeff Halfley on the sideline after that series and says, call it again. Jeff Halfley calls it again. The very next series, it leads to a strip sack. Keyshawn Nixon can do a bit of everything. He can blitz off the slot. He can cover out wide. He can play both inside and outside in the same game. He can play man. He can play zone. And when you have a defensive coordinator like Jeff Halfley who really wants to mix his scheme up and do a lot of different things. Having a corner like that that does a lot of different things is an ideal fit. So I think that Keyshawn Nixon's having a very impressive season. He's got 3 forced fumbles, 3 sacks now as a corner. Really solid year. Going back to Jair Alexander, look, who knows what to expect out of that guy. It's not the first time that we've seen him miss an extended period of time during a season. It happened last year. He came back for the playoffs. He had a big game-turning interception early against Dallas. Those type of things are why you need Jair Alexander on the field for January. In a way, not having a ramp-up against Justin Jefferson, at the end of the day, it's not a huge – I mean, if the Packers lose this week in Minnesota, it's not the end of the day for this team. At this point, the only thing that matters is January. I mean, you want Jair Alexander and everybody clicking and peaking on all cylinders come January, not come week 17. So I'm not too worried about him not having a ramp up to see Justin Jefferson. I don't think it'll be a long exposure, and I don't think that this game ultimately defines their season the way that it does in January. They just need to get him on the field by January to get him some reps and get him back to his best, because this Packers season, there's a limit on how far it can go, I think, without Jair Alexander being on the field.
One thing that has stood out to me from the defense, obviously I wasn't here last year, but when just in talking to these guys, going back to that talk about the prep and how everybody's prepared. I talked to Zane Anderson in the locker room, and who got his first career interception, and he was pretty much asked, like, how can you just basically be thrown into the fire in these situations and be ready to go if there's no Evan Williams or Javon Bullard? And he said, just the way these coaches, they prepare everybody like you're going to start, like you got to be ready to play, make sure you're locked into each and every detail. And I guess that has something that stood out to me looking at a guy like Zane, who have just, there is some depth there. And I mean, he is a guy that, who like, you can almost throw him with the rest of the secondary, just hasn't really made a lot of mistakes. And without, you know, looking at some of the film, what are some other things that you have been able to observe with some of those guys?
Well, they are solid, and again, they don't make a lot of really glaring errors. I think that's the best thing you can say about them. They're anchored by McKinney, who's just, you know, he's sort of the guy who makes everything run. But Zane Anderson's a really good athlete. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell of a special teams player. And you don't become a really good special teams player if you're not an athlete. If you can't run and you can't tackle. And Zane Anderson can do both of those things. Keyshawn Nixon can do that. Keyshawn Nixon's one of the fastest guys on their team. And he can tackle. He's like 4th on the team. He's got like 73 tackles. Evan Williams is a big-time athlete. Yeah. You know, he's very powerful. Bullard, too. So I think they've done a really good job of putting some capable athletes together, and that's kind of what's made everything go. And then Hafley's really done a good job at just making sure. The thing about a zone team is, and I saw something, I can't remember who it was, posted on the Packers have given up more yards or passes across the middle than any other team. And I'm like, well, duh, because they're a zone team. The whole idea is keep everything in front of you, come up, rally, and tackle. And don't let anything get over your head. And they don't. And so that's a lot better than giving up, you know, easy sideline outs that we used to see with against Barry. I mean, it was just like anytime anybody needed a first down, they just scorch him in, you know, in some of his man coverages. So I think, you know, they do as much as possible to limit teams from big plays. And then, you know, the only really trouble they had was with Detroit. And a lot of that had to do with Detroit's offensive line was just dominant.
One of my last points from the defense, I believe, were you able, did you talk to Devontae Wyatt
I did.
In the locker room?
Yeah.
So here, that's another guy I was curious about because, what, he had 2 sacks against Tennessee, goes, what, 8 games, and then is able to, you know, start playing well, was able to get a sack again tonight. You know, what did he kind of say has been the key? But I imagine the big one is health, but just, you know, what are some of the things that he said has been the key?
I think, to me, the biggest positive over Well, not the last two, because Edgerton Cooper is really good in Seattle, but certainly tonight defensively, is Devontae Wyatt finally stringing together some success in the interior pass rush? Because that is what the Packers are absolutely going to need come playoff time. They will not go to the Super Bowl if they don't get their pass rush going. And for the second straight game, they did. And I understand they're going against a rookie quarterback. But this, it's not that like this is the first time Spencer Rattler's played. It's not like the first time the Saints have had a backup quarterback play this season. And the Saints came in to this game tonight only allowing 28 sacks on the season. It was the seventh fewest in the league. The Packers got 3 sacks tonight on Spencer Rattler. They pressured the heck out of him. I mean, all night there was pressure in the backfield. And to the last time they had a big breakout pass rush game, week 3, against Tennessee, they followed the next week against Minnesota, only getting 2 sacks and 3 quarterback hits on Sam Darnold against a Vikings offensive line that has given up a lot of pressure this season. They're among the 10 most sacked teams in the league. So that was they did not build on that at all. And then you saw a large dearth of pass rush until Seattle. And I think tonight they followed up what they did in Seattle in a big way that is very promising. As they now, here comes the big test, right? Can this Vikings offensive line is there for the taking? You can pressure Sam Darnold. This is a Vikings offensive line that gives up sacks. You can get after them, but can they? Because they didn't first game. So can in Minnesota, can they get after this quarterback? But Devontae Wyatt specifically came into this season with his hair on fire in September. 3 sacks in September. Then the injury happened. He sprained his ankle. He said that it wasn't until about Thanksgiving that he felt fine with the ankle. And then it takes a couple weeks, especially for a young guy to kind of find his rhythm again now that you feel healthy. And it sure looks like that's what Devontae Wyatt is doing, is finding that rhythm again. And if that's the case, if this is sustainable, it kind of changes this Packers pass rush. I mean, they've got a guy that can just win his matchups. I know tonight was on a stunt, but the spin move that he had in Seattle was a wicked spin move that Xavier McKinney was still raving about in the locker room tonight. Just having a guy that win your matchups in the pass rush game on the interior is potentially a game changer for this pass rush. That's been the bugaboo. That's been the one thing you say, okay, if they don't go to the Super Bowl, it's because of that. I think it's a big development.
The Packers have a kicker.
They sure do.
I mean,
speaking of developments,
is that kind of the mic drop, right? Brandon McManus, he shows up after a lot of the Packers had their share of nightmares, and the fans probably struggled to sleep at night, probably missed seeing some of those Anders Carlson missed kicks and just woke up abruptly in the middle of the night. But 10-year vet comes in, and I mean, 94.1% on his field goals made, was a 16 of 17. Perfect 100% on extra points, and he had a season-long 55-yarder today, which, I mean, it's in these elements, it's cold and it's all of that. To be able to drill a 55-yarder and a 46-yarder respectively, it was really big, and it really changes so much for these Packers if, you know, you're getting into the playoffs and it's a tight game, you need points, maybe you need a game winner. There isn't that prayer, if you will, if McManus comes out there. It just seemed like he's changed so much for that kicking game.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, if anybody was watching games this weekend, they saw Carlson and Narvison yep. miss field goals. So I don't know if Greg Joseph missed any field goals. I didn't check and see there. But, I don't know how you go from such a bad situation to such a good one other than pure luck. I mean,
no more rookies.
Yeah.
and him just happened to be available.
They have found their answer. And heading into the playoffs, having a clutch guy like that, you know, that can be the difference between, advancing or not. A 55-yard field call, that's pretty, pretty good.
I mean, just listen to these numbers. Anders Carlson last season, 27 of 33 on field goals, 34 of 39 on extra points. So that's what? 72 kicks, he missed 10. Braden Narvison, 6 games this season. 12 of 17 field goals. He did make all 16 of the extra points somehow. So that's what? 5 missed kicks on 33 attempts. Brandon McManus this season, he's now 16 of 17. I believe he's made all 27 of his extra points.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 43. 3 kicks and he's missed one. That is how you fix a kicking situation.
And even I think that one that he missed was like in the rain and it was like tough elements and things like that. But yeah.
And his first two were game winning kicks. Yeah. Like right off the bat. Yeah. Boom, boom. Yeah. Week one, week two, win a game as time expires. Like, there is no question that the Packers have the utmost confidence in a very Mason Crosby sort of way in Brandon McManus if he's lining up for a critical clutch kick in the playoffs.
It was fascinating talking to him in the locker room, just asking him how does he get prepared even for a game like this with the elements and just all that kind of comes with it. I preface it with, like, I know you're a vet. You played in the league a long time. But he said it's different because over at the practice facility, like, it's open and it's like ground level with the wind. It's different going into a stadium with the surrounding. Over my head, I've never been a kicker, but it was just interesting to hear just how everything is just how it kind of prepares you in practice and just the setup. And he gives a lot of credit to Matt Orzech and Daniel Whelan just for the operation. And he just said it's been a smooth transition. And obviously he wasn't a stranger to knowing what had happened the past, you know, couple of years here with the kickers. And he said, like, this is what he wanted to do. He wanted to be a part of the missing piece that this team needed. And I guess this can kind of go into final thoughts as we talk with these guys, you know, making it to the playoffs. Because, you know, we talked about Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney. We can spotlight those guys, too. But McManus made the point. He's like, I haven't been to the playoffs since 2015. When the Broncos won the Super Bowl. So these are like some guys, yeah, there's new guys, but there's also some vets that have played in this league a while that are, you know, trying to enjoy some of this success. And again, they're in position now to, you know, try to get to these playoffs, and who knows what'll happen, but at least making it there is an accomplishment for a lot of these guys that haven't always had that opportunity.
Yeah, the Packers don't really have any guy, I would say maybe Kenny Clark is the exception, who've just been in the league a really long time and like their time is running out. Xavier McKinney's 24 years old. I mean, Josh Jacob is what, 26, 27?
26.
So it's not like, you know, these guys are like, oh, I really wanted to win. Well, you know, you should you know, follow some of these guys who are 11, 12, you know, years. And Mercedes Lewis was a good example. You know, he came hoping to get a Super Bowl, and it just never happened. I think, you know, good players want to go places where they win. You know, they want to get paid. They want to get paid for sure, you know. Xavier McKinney's not coming here unless they paid him more than they were than the Eagles were gonna pay him, and so
because you can win in the Eagles too, right? I mean, yeah, you can win there too,
right? Mm-hmm. Right. But you know, Gutekunst has been finding a way to get the right guys and spending the right money on the right guys, and that's really key. Yeah.
When you're a good player, you know you're getting paid. Good players get paid, so you know that. And what separates ties is winning. And while Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs are both young, they are a seasoned 24 and 26. This is fifth NFL season for Xavier McKinney, sixth for Josh Jacobs. I mean, they've been around, and they haven't won a whole lot. They have been, and here's the thing, you have to understand, their football origin really it's Alabama. They were teammates at Alabama, where winning a national championship was expected as the sunrise. I mean, every game of every single season matters there. And then you get drafted by the New York Giants and the Raiders. Mm-hmm. And you spend years in this football wilderness where you just lose. And all you know is empty seasons and the helplessness of that, which after a while really can set in deep. So when they both entered free agency this spring, winning was very much front of mind. Money, yes, but they knew they were getting paid. Where can you get paid and also win? And I thought that the nostalgia and the almost the emotional kind of just basking in the moment of this, you know, it's, you saw it on both Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs in the locker room after, and you almost forget that here, because here, missing the playoffs in Green Bay is a football tragedy. This is not a wilderness. This is where making the playoffs is like an appetizer to the main course. Mm-hmm. Except it wasn't for these guys. For these guys, it was a moment where they were okay to stop and pause and collect their thoughts and actually appreciate that these appetizers were really, really sweet to them because they don't know what this is like. So, you know, both said that this is why they signed here. Xavier McKinney was very detailed in going back to the recruiting dinner on their free agent visit when Josh Jacobs was in town too. They had steak, sea bass, and shrimp with Matt LaFleur, their families, the coaching staff. And Keyshawn Nixon was there too. And Xavier McKinney was recounting the story. He said, after dinner at Lodge Kohler, the three of them, Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, Keyshawn Nixon, didn't really want the night to end. So they literally went to a parked car in the parking lot of Lodge Kohler, Lambeau Field across the street. And Keyshawn Nixon was kind of explaining to these guys, like, this is how it's different. Because Keyshawn Nixon knows, too. He was a teammate of Josh Jacobs with the Raiders. He knows the difference between a football wilderness and the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm. And for hours in that car, he's explaining how different the reality would be here. And it really set in that, okay, this is a place that you can win. So as Xavier McKinney was asked tonight, what does this mean to you to be able to finally realize this? And Xavier McKinney said, in the past, I mean, he's been in 2022, he was in one playoff with the New York Giants. They beat the Vikings, they lost the following week. And he said, in the past, it's like scratching and clawing to get into postseason with the Giants. Now there's two games left, you clinch a spot. It's very, very different. Keyshawn Nixon pipes in, as Keyshawn Nixon does, and he just shouts, "Welcome to the Packers." Mm-hmm. This is different here.
Yeah.
And they're seeing that. So it was when we're all, you know, Spoon. Well, this is your first time, Dominique.
Yeah.
But Spoon and I have seen a lot of playoff teams. They all kind of just blend together. To see it from someone who's two players that are critical pieces to this team that are not used to this was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, it's definitely been. I had to look up, like, when's the last time those guys won 11 games in a season? And I know they both only went to the playoff once.
Yeah,
I think
once. Since they played. Josh Jacobs in 2021 lost in the wild card round. Xavier McKinney got a win a year later, 2022, against the Vikings. Lost the next week against, I believe, the Eagles.
Yeah. So I can only imagine what it's like to be here now. I mean, obviously, they've raved about it. And even Jacobs looked like he was about to get emotional when he was talking about just the feeling of how it's worked out this far. So,
and this season is, like, let's be very clear. This season is going to leave a sour taste if it does not lead to postseason success. It's not like, oh, they made the playoffs. This is great. This is good enough. No, there is still a main course here. This is still the Green Bay Packers. But it was just a different being able to bask in the moment for a few hours until, you know, Xavier McKinney was asked, how long do you enjoy the shutout?
Yeah,
and how 10 long? 10 a.m. tomorrow, Christmas Eve, because it's a short week going in the Minnesota Vikings. There are still things to play for this season for this team. It's not enough just to make the playoffs. It never will be here. But it was special. It was meaningful to these guys.
Yeah, you said kind of have that moment. Any final words, closing thoughts from either of you guys on anything at all as we wrap up this podcast?
Well, so, you know, what's out there for the Packers? You know, if they win out, they got a chance to improve their seed, but it would, you know, Minnesota would have to lose to Detroit in the final week. And I think Detroit will probably have their number one seed all locked up.
Mm.
Whether they, now, knowing Dan Campbell, he's going to probably play his guys because they're going to get another week off, and you don't want them to go 2 weeks without playing. That that can be a disaster. But, you know, will he play them more than a half? So the Packers might be at, if they beat the Vikings, you know, you expect them to beat the Bears, then it'll come down to that Detroit game. And then you're asking yourself, well, is a fifth seed better than a sixth? Who are they going to play? I mean, there's just too much out there to know, you know, who would be the best team for them to play. We know they're going to go on the road. I guess if they're the fifth team, if there's some kind of upset, a couple of upsets, they could wind up playing a home game. But if they're the sixth seed, I wouldn't count on it. So anyway, that's what's out there for them. And, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I think beating the Vikings would be a huge jump for them going into the playoffs. I think losing wouldn't be the end of the world, but I mean, to go 0-4 against the Lions and Vikings, I think that would be a bad message. So they got to figure out a way to at least play their best football. If they play their best football and lose, okay, so be it.
They've won 5 of their 6 games since the bye. So they do have a chance with a strong finish to do what they did last year. And that's peak at the right time. Be that team that gets hot. And that means something in this league. You want to be that team that gets hot at the right time. So, yeah, I mean, they're still playing for things. You also want to be the team that the seed that's going to the NFC South and not the NFC West in the wild card. I mean, there is, I think, a significant difference between whether that's a Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that just lost to the Dallas Cowboys or an Atlanta Falcons team that's going with Michael Penix or the Los Angeles Rams that have Matthew Stafford. And now this time, unlike last, they should have Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp. One of those teams is not like the others. So I think there is a difference between the 5 and the 6 seed. And ultimately, you want to put yourself in the best position to make this run. You want the easiest path. If the Detroit Lions are the number 1 seed, you can make an argument that the 6 seed is not the worst thing in the world because you'd rather probably go to Detroit than Philadelphia, I would think, considering how bare-boned that Lions roster is right now. Maybe, I don't know if they get David Montgomery back, but I would rather go to Detroit than Philadelphia.
Either way, if they're going anywhere, they're going to Detroit and they're going to Philadelphia. That's the path.
That's the path,
That's the gauntlet.
Unless someone beats Philly. I mean, Philly to me is the team that would scare me the most, so long as Justin Jefferson. So long as Jalen Hurts recovers from this concussion. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the team. And I haven't said this all. I picked the Detroit Lions to win the NFC before the season. I've said all season that they're the best team in the conference, and at full strength, they absolutely are. But goodness, they're so far from that. So to me, the one team that you just like to avoid if you could possibly have someone else take care of them would be the Philadelphia Eagles. But yeah, I the Packers aren't going to be ruminating on this. They're going to play whoever. They go out and play.
Yeah. Matchups are everything, but there's no question about it. The Lions are very fragile. I guess there's my Christmas reference right there. They're very fragile.
Can you explain how that's a Christmas reference?
A Christmas Story. You've never watched A Christmas
Story? I've watched The Christmas Story. It is completely escaping
me. The package he gets.
Oh.
The leg lamp. Yeah. Fragile.
It is late, man.
It's Italian, right? Yeah.
It is late. It's early. So late, it's early.
It is. So we're going to wrap up this show. And, we'll get ready because there will be obviously more talk about the Vikings throughout this week. And, I mean, it is. It's going to be a big game. And the players made it clear that they are not overlooking this game or not taking a breather or taking a rest before the playoffs. They do want to win this game. So it will be an interesting matchup, and we'll be talking more about it throughout this week. So we thank you all for checking out the Green 19 podcast. Have a Merry Christmas, everyone. Enjoy your time with your families. And thank you all for following along with all of us for your Packers coverage. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominic Yates.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.